chapter 3 of Galatians, and verse 1. 1 through 9, that's what we'll look at tonight, and it's Paul is begins a little different phase of his argument, and it's back to the idea of the gospel, but more specifically here, the focus becomes that the outcome of the gospel being justification, that justification comes about by faith, that this right relationship with God is based upon faith alone. He began his gospel, letter to the Galatians by, in verse 1, verse 6 of chapter 1, saying he was amazed that they had so quickly left the gospel. And then in the next section there, he argued about the authority of his gospel, that it came to him directly through revelation. It was authoritative because when he went to Jerusalem, that the apostles there approved of it also. It was the same thing they preached. It has an authority because he used it to confront Peter, and Peter wasn't in denial of it, basically. So it's those bases. And now he comes back to this thing where he started, that they've left the gospel. And so here he says, "You foolish Galatians, who has bewitched you, before whose eyes Jesus Christ was publicly portrayed as crucified?" That, you know, it's not just simply that he's amazed now, but he's saying it's foolish. This was a foolish thing to do. This is a stupid thing to do. I think the Living Bible has it, it's idiotic. But he even moves beyond that. It's almost as though somebody's cast a spell upon you. Who's bewitched you? It's in that sense of moving beyond what's even reasonable, beyond what somebody would think. It's as though somebody has control over you if you've moved in this position. And he says, because the position was where Christ and the gospel and his crucifixion, but all of this has changed. In verse 3 he says, "This is the only thing I want to find out from you." And this section has to, he really addresses their personal experience. Sometimes, in the last, 20 years for sure, with the such a move away from truth and embracing relative truth and experience, everything's so experiential that at times we almost hear the way that you give a gospel presentation is, it's got to be free of personal experience. Everything's got to be based upon truth, as though you cannot use your personal experiences. Now, when you use your personal experiences to define truth or to be the basis of what you believe, then that becomes an issue. But there's a place for personal experiences, because you've personally experienced it. And that's what he's talking about here. And he begins this first section with personal experience, then he moves to an Old Testament standard. He says, "This is the only thing I want to find out from you." And so he's asking them a question. In Galatians 3:2, "Did you receive the Spirit by the works of the law or by hearing with faith?" Now, it's very possible here that this is a rhetorical question. It's not that he was asking them to, really give a reply in the writing. The answer is implied there because they know. But it's really a good place to start. Did you receive the Spirit by the works of the law or by hearing with faith? Well, the Galatians, when they first believed, it was not because we've done this, that we're justified. It's because we received the gospel by faith. But that whole position is changing now. They've been challenged. They've been brought into, these outsiders from the Galatians. The Judaizers have come and they've set up a camp and started talking about the way certain things have to be, and that you're not spiritual enough unless you're like this. And all of a sudden, people start changing where they've been. So Paul's asking that question. And he says, are you so foolish, having begun by the Spirit, are you now being perfected by the flesh? See, the obvious answer to verse 2 is, well, we started off by hearing the faith. And then so he says, are you so foolish that you begun this way and now you're this way? So if you can get your beginning in something, if the way you get into it is this way, why would you have to progress a different way? If you do works to obtain the threshold of salvation, then it would make sense that you're going to have to continue to work to advance. But if no matter how many works you do, you cannot get into the door of the gospel, then once you're in there, why would works progress and move you upward? But that's basically what they've moved to. Did you suffer so many things in vain, if indeed it was vain? That verse is a little more difficult, but I think it's in the sense of, all the things that, you've believed, that Paul says in Corinthians about, if we've trusted Christ for salvation and that it's not, you don't get salvation that way, then it's all in vain, and we're to be pitied. Have you placed all this faith in Christ for nothing? I think it's where he's coming from. If indeed it was vain. But that's what you're saying now. We spent these years trusting, but that wasn't good enough. We now realize we got to work. And so he's saying, well, then all that was empty. All of it was useless. Is that really true? So then, does he who provides you with the Spirit and works miracles among you do it by works of the law or by hearing with faith? Excuse me. And that becomes the question. God provides you with the Spirit and works miracles among you. Is this provided to you? Are the miracles provided? Is the Spirit infused within you because of the works you do or because of faith? And, I think what you start seeing here is that sometimes we want to come along, I say we in a broad sense of Christians, we want to come along and put little tags on certain things and say, well, this is the exception, this has to, this is a rule that ought to be followed, or it ought to be this way, without seeing how it would impact everything. And Paul doesn't leave it there. He starts looking at individual things as, well, the miracles that happen, are the miracles because you work or because of faith? And you think about that. We pray, and we're saying, God, answer this prayer. What would be the basis of God answering that prayer? It's either he's going to answer it because it's a gift or because we deserve it. What other option is there? And so if you say, well, the reason those things happen is because we deserve it, then we're earning it. And so that's how you'd explain the miracles. But then you kind of, how far do you really want to go down that road of saying we deserve, we've earned? And so that's where Paul really presses it. You'd be hard pressed. I think the Galatians would have been hard pressed to say, that's what we meant. We deserve it. We're working for it. And on those things, they say, no, the Spirit came to us out of faith. The miracles occur because of God's grace out of faith. But yet, we still have to work. And it's that, but yet, kind of thing that we at times are willing to live with the inconsistency and say, oh, it's okay. But Paul says, no, it's got to be one way or the other. He moves from there to a second argument, and this argument has to do with the Old Testament. It has to do with Abraham. And Abraham, had a place in heritage here more significant than we can probably truly recognize. So a great number of the Galatians would have been Gentiles, but there are Gentiles that have been influenced by the Judaizers now, plus the Jews there that have been extremely re-influenced by the Judaizers. And Abraham becomes a central person into that whole culture then as the father, of the people. Even so, Abraham believed God and it was reckoned to him as righteousness. And if you look at back in Genesis in 15:6, as Paul is calling Abraham and establishing a covenant with him, Paul? Oh, that's horrible. In verse 5, and he took him, God, that is God, not Paul. God took Abraham outside and said, "Now look toward the heavens and count the stars, if you are able to count them." And he said to them, "So shall your descendants be." With various light pollutions we have, you have a really hard time appreciating how many stars there are. If you go to the mountains or I guess the desert or something, blendas. But even around, even if you get outside of town, you can see a lot more. But if you get really isolated, there's just the stars. There are a lot of stars. It's amazing. But even what we can see, there's a lot. And he says, these stars that are beyond what you can count, then you're going to have descendants beyond that. And basically says, "Do you believe that?" And Abraham says, "Then he believed the Lord, and he reckoned it to him as righteousness." His whole relationship with God there is based upon belief. God said, "This is the way it's going to be. Do you believe it?" "Yeah, I believe it." The trust, the message of the gospel was different for Abraham than it is for us because Christ hadn't been to the cross. His salvation would still have been based forward-looking on Christ's crucifixion. But that content was, God gave him a content, and it had to be believed, and Abraham believed it. And so he's saying here, even so Abraham believed God, and it was reckoned to him as righteousness. Therefore, be sure that it is those who are of faith who are sons of Abraham. Now, there's a change of interpretation almost. Who are the sons of Abraham? Well, it's those who are of the bloodline. It is the Jews are the sons of Abraham. And Paul is saying, Abraham is a man of faith. He didn't earn his righteousness by works. He earned it by faith. And those that are truly his sons are those who have believed God and have attained righteousness because of faith, not by works. The Scriptures, foreseeing that God would justify the Gentiles by faith, preached the gospel beforehand to Abraham, saying, "All the nations will be blessed in you." Back in the same general passage we were at, just a couple of chapters before, when he is called, in chapter 12, it says, "Now the Lord said to Abram, 'Go forth from your country and from your relatives and from your father's house to the land which I will show you. And I will make you a great nation, and I will bless you and make your name great. And so you shall be a blessing. And I will bless those who bless you, and the ones who curse you I will curse. And in all the families of the earth shall, and in you all the families of the earth shall be blessed.'" God's plan has always been that Gentiles would be included in, you know, his kingdom, in that part. And so with Israel, Israel was a nation and Gentiles could come into it. The mystery in the New Testament isn't that Gentiles can be saved. The mystery is that Gentiles and Jews are one in Christ. Because in the Old Testament, the Jews, the Gentiles could come in, but they weren't, there wasn't that the same identification. But there's always been this provision for Gentiles. And it was through the blessing of Abraham. Well, how did Abraham gain his righteousness? Was it through works? No. It was reckoned to him through faith. And through Abraham, all the nations or peoples can be blessed. And so it's that association of faith. And he concludes, so those who are of faith are blessed with Abraham the believer. And so Paul's logic moves in terms of saying, Abraham was, righteousness was attributed to him by faith. Those that have faith are his sons. The Gentiles were always going to be blessed through Abraham. But how does Abraham provide a blessing for the people? Well, it's those that have faith. And he groups those all together. And so his argument goes both to the people saying, what really happened when you first came in and heard the gospel? Did you earn your salvation or did you gain it by faith? And if they're honest, they'd say, well, back then we did it by faith, but we've learned now that that was just stupid, whatever they might say, but that's where they were. And then he goes back to the Old Testament and says, but even Abraham didn't earn his salvation. It was by faith. And he would be a blessing. God's always going to bless the world, bring Gentiles into the kingdom, but it's always been designed to be through faith. So that's where he begins his argument at this point about them departing from the gospel, them departing from justification, them departing from a faith-based sanctification. And that's what we see more often now than we do people within a Christendom than saying that you actually earn salvation. Pretty much in Christendom, you either have those that salvation is just to anybody and everybody. It's just kind of a liberal view. Whenever it's convenient, there's a God and you're going to heaven and everybody's going. Or you have those that pretty much maintain that salvation is by faith. But the whole sanctification thing is much more. Now, there are groups, that I think are off on the salvation, but I just don't think it's the major thing we hear about. But the sanctification part is very much that. And you think about that, then that's what Paul is saying at that point. Well, if you began your Christian walk by faith, does it make any sense that the only way you're going to progress is through works? And then he would go back and say, but even that wasn't true with Abraham either. What do you have, questions or insights?
Well, this is kind of going back and probably feels more ignorance on my part than anything, but when was this written relative?
Galatians is usually thought of as one of the earlier books.
James sent those guys over. Maybe he was reading the book of James that got them all mixed up.
I like that. Of course, you have, Ryrie's dating. Is basically the same time period. Of course,
read the book of James and come away thinking that you have to do stuff in order to be saved.
True. We do. Evidently, that wasn't much of an issue early on. It's one that made the book.
And at some level, we do.
Oh, have to do something?
Yeah.
You just...
because, yes, it's by faith, but that shows itself in changes in how we live.
Yeah.
And so...
Well, and the faith, as James is talking about times, faith is a little different than here. And you have to take that into account. I don't know that the dating of the books necessarily lends itself to that, because Paul's argument isn't necessarily, you know, that this with James just happened, or with Peter, or that these were sent from James. And the other one, I guess, is that even though these people came from James, because that'd be going back to Peter, is it's, I mean, was, you know, there's, you know, did James approve, or these people, whatever reason, when they got away from there, they just started pushing their own agenda. That seemed to be more the case. But it is interesting that they came there. They weren't just evidently self-appointed. But that is an interesting one. Any other comments or thoughts?
As you were looking at verses 2 and 3, I kept thinking about the people who bargain with God.
Mm-hmm.
You know, their prayers, not only are they works-based, but it's future works.
Yeah.
If you get me out of this, I will do this.
And I think
that's how Martin Luther became
and, you know, depending on what your relationship with God is, you know, what your theology is, then you kind of do that. But it's, you know, from a lack of theology or lack of relationship, or maybe with guilt, you know, we can get into that. Mm-hmm. And it, yeah. And that says a lot about the way we view it. You know, do we deserve something? I like the in the Seinfeld, George's at some, he's in a counselor or something, and I think it's right when something really good is going to happen, and he's, some spot comes on his neck or something. He's worried it's going to be cancerous. Can't remember exactly, but. Oh, you know, basically says, oh, God's going to get me or something. And, you know, he's not going to let anything good happen to me. You know, they go, I didn't think you believed in God. I do for the bad things. And I think it's, you know, there is that part where we start that, you know, and I think it is that bargaining that basically becomes that. And it's really easy to do that. Not to realize that it is by faith, it is by grace we never deserved. Yeah. Other comments? Well, are there prayer requests?